Heyo, welcome to No Show. I'm your host, Jack, and with me today, we have got a very special guest, Jackson Rowe. Now, Jackson, apart from being a Laurier alumni, you also have your own comedy sketch troupe, Trophy Husbands, and a new CBC show, For Heaven's Sake.
Correct. Hi, thank you for having me.
Awesome, thank you for coming. All right, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. The show's coming out March 4th. Mm-hmm. So that's a couple days, and basically, yeah, just enjoying the trailer release and now getting ready for it to come out. It's been cool.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you want to give us like a little kind of brief overview of what the show is about?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's called For Heaven's Sake. It's a true crime show that's made by comedians. So myself and Mike Milden are two amateur investigators that are taking on a 87-year-old cold case that happened to a member of Mike's family, the Heaven family from Minden, Ontario. Harold Heaven is his name. He disappeared 87 years ago and his body was never found. No trace of him was ever found. And it's become this campfire story amongst the Heaven family. Mm. And so Mike and I got our hands on the actual police reports from 1934. Wow. And that spurred us into trying to make our own true crime show.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I got to watch the first couple of episodes to prep for this. And it's such a cool story. It's such like an interesting, just cold.
Isn't it? Yeah, I know. It seemed like a real no brainer once he had told me the story, but then once I read the police reports for myself, I was like, oh, there actually is like a true crime. It sort of hits all the points you want it to hit. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah. So here in the notes, we like to play a couple of kind of little games each episode. So I thought that this week we'd start with one. It's kind of like break the ice, get it going a little bit.
Let's go.
All right. So I mentioned earlier you have a sketch comedy troupe, Trophy Husbands, with Mike. Mike's also in that.
Yes.
So I'm going to read you a line from an online review, and you try to guess if it is a review for Trophy Husbands or the Indiana Jones stunt show at Disney World.
Okay. Let's try.
All right. All right. So we'll start off.
I didn't even know we had reviews. Sorry, go ahead.
The guys making this thing seem to be amused and having fun.
That better be about us. That can't be. Okay. Yeah, that has to be Trophy Husband.
I was like, it is. It is 100%.
Okay. Okay. Good point. That person makes a very good point. We are amused. We amuse ourselves.
Exactly. Next one. Educational if you have a young filmmaker in the family.
That can't be us. No, that has to be the Indiana Jones thing.
You're right, Indiana Jones.
Yeah. We don't get that kind of family-friendly response normally. Hopefully with this show.
Yeah. All right. Next one, more negative. The show isn't bad, just outdated.
I'm going to say Indiana Jones again because I hope that's not about us, but who knows.
You're right, 100%. Yeah. Could you imagine if I brought you on the show and started reading you negative reviews?
If it was only negative reviews, that would be a bit of an ambush, let's be honest.
Let's do.
You set me up with one positive up top and then just knock me down.
Oh, man. Next one. The best kind of dumb, smart comedy.
That's Trophy Husbands to a T, I would hope.
100%.
Yes. Nice. That's excellent.
Next one, my personal favorite on the list, in all lowercase, watch it, period.
Oof. Is that Indiana Jones?
That is Trophy Husbands, I'll tell
Get
you.
Get out, really?
Yeah, I will say, very positive review, but all lowercase.
Yeah.
That all a just little after every sentence.
If I see that, I'm not necessarily going to watch it. I don't know if I trust this person, but I appreciate it.
It was a That's raving awesome. Five-star review. All very monotone.
Simplicity. I love it.
Then last one, should orient more to children.
Oh my God. Is that Indiana Jones?
It is. Indiana Jones. Okay,
good.
I was surprised. I thought it was already a pretty children-friendly show. But
I mean,
this parent did not think so. That's the game. You nailed it. You did very well. Good job.
Thanks, man. That's a fun game. Thanks for doing
it. Oh, thank you. You're welcome. So where'd you get your start in comedy? Pretty much, how do you go from a Laurier English student to an award-winning comedian with your own sketch show?
Wow, that's a very nice way of putting it. I don't know there's no secret to it, I'll tell you that much. But I went to Second City. I took improv classes at Second City. And in the first class, I met John, who's one of the third Trophy Husband. Mm-hmm. And then in the next level, we both met Mike. And then it kind of snowballed from there. So I think we were lucky that we took comedy classes to be around other people who like comedy. And then we found like specific people that really we vibed with. And we were all there for the same thing. So we all started a sketch troupe, and that was 2014. And I think we've been making videos pretty much ever since.
Awesome. Yeah. Do you find that your comedy style changed at all once you were actually kind of in a classroom setting learning it?
Yeah, I do think so. I think from joking around with your friends to sort of being put in a more specific environment that is about learning and sort of growth is intimidating at first. And it's like, it's hard to sort of just be goofy, and you really want to be funny. It's like, you're there, you're telling the world you're funny, and it's tough sometimes. So it's not for everybody, but I think once it's about being comfortable. That's what it was for me. It was like finding a class that made you comfortable, and then you could be yourself. And then the teacher's words started to make more sense, and everything started to work a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Sorry, one second. I have to let my cat out. He's freaking out. One second.
My cat is calling my door too.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Sorry.
Oh, no worries. Usually once per no show, my cat is calling at my door like crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's good. It's a classic moment. Yeah.
What's your cat's name?
I have 6 cats.
Get the hell out of here, really?
Yeah, true. Yeah. We're a family. We love cats. So we got Fuzzy, Sally, Harry, Scooter, Fonzie, lovely Rita. And then two that we feed outside. It's good. It's a good
thing. And how many people in the house?
Three.
Three people, 6 cats. Yeah. Damn.
It's true. And one rabbit as of last week.
And his name or her name?
John.
John. Yeah. Wow, man.
It's a fun time. It's a fun time.
It's a weird thing to tell somebody. It's like, yeah, I have 6 cats. Now I don't want to talk about anything else, but we can continue.
Let's do it. Oh, man. I got where it was. What was your time at Laurier like? Did that at all kind of spark your interest in comedy?
Yeah, but not, it was because I hated it, honestly. It was because I realized that I didn't want to do school. Mm-hmm. So I liked Laurier. Like, I went because it was outside of Toronto and I wanted to go away to school. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, I was like, I don't know, it didn't fit for me. Just post-secondary was not my thing. So, it took, a year or two at Laurier to realize that. And then I sort of took accountability of what do I want to do? And that's when I started to really pursue comedy. So it did help me, but it wasn't maybe in the traditional avenue. Yeah, Laurier, when I was going, was like a business and science school, and it wasn't really known for English or the arts or anything like that. So I felt like a little bit like I wasn't being stimulated the way I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's not their fault. That's not anybody's fault. We just didn't match in the academic sense, but in the culture sense, I really enjoyed it. I met great people, and it was a fun place to be. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Sweet. Did you have like an aha moment of when you knew you wanted to go into comedy?
No, maybe not when I wanted to go in, but I think the first time I did stand-up comedy was the like an aha moment for like, oh, I like this. I really like. That was like, I'll do it. I think I'll like it. I don't know for sure. And then the first time I did it, I kind of fell in love then. There's definitely a moment there. But as far as like knowing I wanted to do it, no, I think I've kind of always known I wanted to do something like performative, some sort of comedy. But you never think that you'll be the one to succeed, or it's such a crapshoot of who gets what, you know? So it's kind of a hard thing to admit to yourself that you want to pursue it, but I think I always probably knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were there any like big name comedians who kind of shaped your interest in your style of comedy?
There's a ton. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Growing up, I loved Dane Cook. Was the first person that I saw do stand up and thought it was like blew me away as a boy. And then I graduated into like Chappelle and Louis C.K. at the time, really hilarious. And then I started doing it on my own, and that's when podcasts started to pop up more. So I was listening to like Pete Holmes, Bill Burr, a ton of just like comedians who talked into a mic and called it a podcast. And I loved all that. So it was really, I think that's another formative thing, is just having access to all this comedy now with all the podcasts. It makes it seem more like more of a viable thing. And that really, like, I would just listen to them all the time. It was great.
Yeah, you can pretty much find comedy on like any media now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
You can find it in that true crime show now, for heaven's sake. You know, exactly. What I mean?
It's true. Lots of it. Lots of it. Was it a big leap going from writing comedy sketches to like tackling a true crime docuseries?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. In every sense, it was a huge step. From the size of the production itself to not working off a script, mm-hmm. to like, and really trying, you know, to play the part of a detective, you know, for the camera and for the show, but we actually had to move the case forward. We actually had to make progress, or no one's going to watch the show. So there was a pressure on us to, this is cool, this idea is great, and like, we like watching you guys, but if it doesn't go anywhere, what are we going to do? That was always a pressure. And so it was really both challenging and then rewarding when we did, you know, actually make progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And so the story of Mike's great uncle,
yeah.
Was that a story that like you've known for years, or was it just kind of more recently, kind of when the idea came out? That
for me, it was more recent. It was, I think, probably 2018. Mike had come home because we were roommates. He had come home from a family Thanksgiving in Minden. Like, they have a big, mm-hmm. I don't know, 30, 40 people Thanksgiving. And he was like, he'd always heard the story as a kid, but like he had kind of almost been let into like the adult version of it at this point on this Thanksgiving. And he was just told me about it. And he's like, and his uncle had the police report. So he's like, I'm going to get those and we could look at it, because I think it could be like a fun thing for us to dive into. So I only knew it as a true crime. I never knew it as a campfire story like he did. But that allowed me to like look at it in a bit of a different light and not be as sentimental with it, which is why we're a good investigative team, because it's about his family. So he's going to have biases, and I kind of have to try and keep him grounded a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then at what point did this kind of turn from a cool story to look into to like, we could actually make this a series?
It happened pretty fast, honestly. We went in for a meeting at this production company, Muse, which is a great company here in Toronto. They had seen our sketches and called us in to just chat about maybe doing something. And they were like, we really want to do something like American Vandal, but real, like a real version of that. And we were like, well, we have these. And it was kind of, that was serendipitous, that moment. And then once we realized we could do that, Mike and I have a relationship with Funny or Die, the website, and like all those people, yeah. from making sketches, and they produced American Vandal. And so we got in touch with them, and they connected us with the actual creators of American Vandal. And it was like, oh my God, these guys are going to help us make the show that we're trying to sort of emulate. Mm-hmm. And then once they were on board, it felt like everywhere we met with was like, oh, these guys are such hot commodities, I think, in Hollywood, that when we met with anybody, they were like, they just wanted to buy the show because they were involved. So that was pretty cool for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great, just like kind of cascading, like finding a story led to this, to that, to that, and then now you have.
Yeah, it really is. It really is like very lucky, and sort of luck meets opportunity all at the right times. Pretty nice. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That's great. And so how do you even approach a cold case? Like where do you start? How do you?
Yeah, a great question. The way we did was obviously the police reports and like using that as a base, and then just talking to everybody. Cause what we learned is that anything, we're not going to like the odds of us finding, you know, hard evidence that we can hold on to from 87 years ago, very slim. The more likely thing is that someone knows something, and because enough time has passed, they're more willing to talk now. And maybe that leads to a real confession, like a secondhand confession, always felt like the best we could do. Mm-hmm. And so it was just spreading the word about the case within town And then speaking to everybody who would talk to us, who kind of had a lead, had a story, had even a memory of the case. Because what we found out was that Minden, so many people knew about the case. It was like embedded in their history. So it wasn't hard to find people to talk to, but it was hard to then decide, okay, which of this stuff are we going to trust and which is the stuff we want to pursue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that'd be like, even after like 87 years, there's got to be people who want like fame, who want to say that they were a part of it. So they're going to just kind of come forward.
Yes. And people who are even confused because there's other missing people from up there. And that's another thing we found out is everyone was a little just too comfortable with like, oh yeah, another one went missing. Another, oh, yeah, people come up here to dump bodies all the time. Weird stuff like that would come out and be like, oh, okay, let's tread lightly.
Yeah, oh man. So going into it, so kind of with trying to find maybe a secondhand confession, how confident were you guys in either actually getting to a complete conclusion or at least making a huge like discovery?
Honestly, we were always very confident in the face of all the facts. Like I think that's what made us excited to do the show in the first place was like, if we didn't believe we could really do it, then it would be a bummer to act to go through the motions. So we knew the case better than anybody and that we had, you know, the new technology and some funding backing us to let us try it, pretty much everything we wanted to do. So if anyone was going to do it, it was going to be us. That's the way we thought of it. Mm-hmm. There's moments we get discouraged for sure throughout the show, but we never really lost faith.
Nice. Yeah. And I did notice that like reading about it and hearing what you guys had to say in the stuff that I watched, that you guys are kind of like the first ones to really, really deeply look into it.
Yes. And I think that's, after the police closed it in 1934, the family, was grieving. And the way they chose to grieve was sort of tuck it under the rug and not really dive into it again. And you'll see later in the season is like, we sort of talk about that and then see the way it's gone down through generations of, okay, the people who actually knew Harold, they tucked it under the rug. But then the next generation really was fascinated by it. And so they wanted to look into it, but not offend the generation before. And so that was one dynamic. And then the next generation, which is like mom or Mike's parents, they were so far removed that they could sort of dive into it more. And now that we're even farther removed from that, it's like we've really got carte blanche basically. But yeah
and that's good for why you're there is because you're a total third party. You're able to get right into it.
I know the like meeting the family was amazing and they were all very kind and trusting with me. So I wasn't like out to like really bust anyone's balls, you know, but I was willing to ask any hard questions Mike didn't want to ask, push any buttons that he felt a little too sensitive on. And we had to, but it was like, they wanted to solve the case too. So they weren't really, they had nothing to hide. It wasn't too difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So because this was like a cold case, did you guys have a point beforehand that you decided you were going to stop? Was there maybe like a goal that you wanted to hit or even a point without a discovery for a certain amount of time that you were going to just kind of table it for then?
Never. It was like, we will not go forever, obviously, but we'll just go until we get the answer that's satisfactory to us was always the idea. And then like, so we started January 2020. Mm-hmm. And then by March 2020, obviously, the pandemic hit. And so that really, you know, caused us to have to reevaluate and decide what can we actually get without having to wait until all this uncertainty is done with. So that's what really made us reassess it. And then, you'll see in the show, but it was never like, all right, we'll try for 10 months or we'll try for 2 years. It was just this, we're lucky enough to make this our job for the filming of the show. Mm-hmm. And then if we can't deliver what we want, then we'll just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. So you're a fan of true crime, correct?
Definitely.
Awesome. Do you have like a favorite cold case apart from this one that you would ever want to do a similar series on?
I don't know. I mean, I have a million different cases that I like and documentaries that I like. Mm-hmm. And I would love to do a second season of this, but mm-hmm. It's really emotionally taxing, honestly. Yeah. I think it's like, especially if we're dealing with a whole new family, and like, it seems fun at first. And then by the end, you're just really dealing with very heavy topics and stuff. So I would love to do it again, but I haven't sort of seen one that's grabbed my interest. I'm really just like head down on this project. Let's get it out and see if people like it, and then we'll decide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you are dealing with like real people.
Yeah, 100%, and that's a big theme in the show, of as much as we are there to be not comic relief, but like a light touch on a heavy subject. Mm-hmm. It's still a heavy subject, and that's gonna win every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have just like a general like dream projects? Maybe something you would make if money was no object?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, Mike and I, like, we've been writing, we have, I don't know, 3 or 4 show ideas that are more centered around like our sketch humor. Mm-hmm. That's like really what we love to do, is sort of genre bending, add comedy into genres and sort of play with this is our true crime show. Like, we've done, a mafia sketch. We've done like a green screen. Like, you pick a trope and sort of go with it. We like to do that. So as far as like what to pursue, if money is no option, it would be something along those lines. I think that's still what we love the most. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would be our own sketch show or maybe just a TV series, a comedic TV series, but nothing. Unscripted was totally new to us. And that's why it's like, was so exciting. And so I'm sure we'll live in that space too, but I'm always drawn more to scripted comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And sketch comedy is just like so fun. It's mm-hmm. very fun to write and then rehearse and act out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very difficult to make it into a show too. Like everyone, or it's a lot of material. So you really have to be committed, but it is very, very fun.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. In prep for this, I went through a bunch of Trophy Husband sketches and I liked them a lot. I thought they're really, really funny.
Thank you very much. That's great. Cool.
Piqued my interest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have a dream kind of comedian to work with, or as person in general?
Oof. Paul Thomas Anderson. Mm-hmm. He's a great director. No, I don't know. I don't necessarily think of it like that. I'd want to be on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I'd want that. Would be cool.
Awesome.
Seinfeld, maybe. That'd
be great.
Yeah. Or SNL. I mean, some of the big institutions, that would be fun, but I don't know. We like making our own stuff. It's not really like a need to collab. Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice. That's a good idea. All right. Yeah. I'm going to toss a second game of the episode at you.
Sure.
This one is, I'm going to throw at you a hypothetical situation. You gain something, but there's also a drawback. So we'll kind of talk through it, and then we'll end it with if you would take it or not.
Sounds good.
So the situation is, you find out exactly what happened to Harold Heaven, but to get that information, you have to beat Mike in a one-on-one fight. Mike gets a knife and you don't. Do you take the deal?
Why does Mike know why we're fighting?
I'm going to say that Mike thinks he's fighting for the truth.
Oh,
so he's gonna fight.
That's a good wrinkle. Yeah. No, I value my friendship with Mike over the answer to Harold's story, and I think he would probably beat me too. So it's kind of a lose-lose. But no, I couldn't beat Mike up even for the answers.
Oh, that's nice. That's a wholesome. That's really like wholesome answer. It's good. We get wholesome here on the no show sometimes.
Sorry, did I not ask him too many? I could ask more questions about the scenario.
But that's good. No, that's a very good, like, just open and shut. Yeah.
Yeah, you would have to, there would have to be more dangling at the end of the carrot at the end of the string for me to beat up Mike. It would take more than that.
That's good. That's nice. That's a very, like, nice, positive answer. Yeah. So is this show, do you think, the start of maybe a new chapter for you? Do you think that your career is going to maybe start shifting more towards projects like this?
Yeah, I mean, we really don't know. I don't know what doors this will open for me. I hope, well, I'm open to anything. And I hope that if people are drawn to this show, because it is a unique style, then we can totally make more and play into that. And I think it's very possible that that's a career shift. But like I said before, we would love to do scripted comedy too. So we'll just see what people like about the show and what we can sort of build off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. Yeah. You usually see, like, I think with comedians especially, just kind of like different like phases in careers.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. You see it everywhere, and it's cool to kind of watch and follow it.
Right. Yeah. You're like, you find someone that you love, and then you're like, oh, they used to do that? That's so weird. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe we'll have a trajectory like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'll be honest, that's all the questions that I had prepared. We still got some time left, so we can just kind of talk about the show. And
sure thing, man. Well, just tell me more about the six cats really quick.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What happened? Was it like all six individually just showed up, or did you buy six at a time? What happened?
So I've always had cats. When I was born, we had two cats, Rover and Fifi. When Rover died, my mom found another cat, Fuzzy, at the shelter. So we have Fuzzy. She's very old and deaf and blind at this point.
Oh, jeez.
And then Fifi died, and we got Harry, second oldest.
Okay.
And then my grandparents and my uncle and his wife live on a farm, not that far from where I live. And so of course they have a bunch of farm cats going around, and there was one summer that they had a really bad coyote issue.
Ooh.
And so my mom pretty much was like, you know what? We're going to save a cat from the coyotes. So then we got Sally. And then there was like a long time of no new cat. So we just kind of hung out with those three.
That's three. Yeah. That seems like enough.
Yeah. And then my mom is part of a bunch of like cat rescue groups on Facebook. Okay. And one night this lady posted like, hey, we found this cat in this drug house. Can anybody take him to the local adoption shelter? And so my mom met this lady in a Walmart parking lot and got the cat. And then we ended up keeping the cat. And so that's
four.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then we had, I'm realizing now how insane this whole story is. And then it gets
a lot of cats.
And then we had, there was a stray cat that would hang around our backyard. We named her Lady Madonna, once again after Beatles song.
Nice.
And then she had kittens, and she was, I think, pregnant with more. And so we trapped her. I think it was pretty much where there was her and another cat. The other cat was very like not well, very mangy, very gross. So we trapped both of them. We took the one cat to get fixed, and they pretty much were like, listen, we're just going to put this cat down. It's full of just disease. And we were like, okay, that makes sense. Then the female, Lady Madonna, she had just had kittens. So we literally trapped her and the kittens, got them all fixed, like neutered and spayed. Two of the kittens got fostered out. The other two got fostered out, but they got sent back to us. And then we just, so that is Fonzie. And that is kind of the natural progression of all of our cats.
All right. Yeah, you guys should not be allowed to foster cats, because you'll just keep them, it sounds.
100%.
That's really interesting, man. Yeah, I had a cat growing up at my parents' house, and now I have a cat as an adult. So I'm a cat fan too, but always just one.
Yeah, I love cats. They're good, yeah.
I want... Two, I think that makes sense to me, because the cat should have somebody to interact with, that it's its own species. You can leave them alone and they're not lonely.
Exactly, so, yeah. Two is a really solid number, and then it just kind of gets crazier as you get...
Snowball. Yeah, I get it.
We had, we have a new rabbit that we took in for a family friend, and then my sister had a rabbit, and back when she lived here, before she moved away, there was a really weird power dynamic in the house. Because Scooter and Fonzie were strays, they were like above the rabbit, but the rabbit would attack all the other cats.
Oh.
And so it was a very kind of weird food chain in our house.
So the rabbit's just loose, it's not in a cage?
That rabbit passed away like a year, I think not even a year, maybe like a couple of months ago. And then this new rabbit is in my dad's room, office. And then we just kind of have him free reign of that room.
Okay.
So the other cats aren't going crazy.
How bad does a rabbit bite hurt? Pretty bad, right?
I've been able to avoid being bitten by rabbits.
Oh, really?
In my life, yeah. Hamsters, definitely. Many bites.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine it's bad, but not crazy. Because they got bad teeth.
That's what, yeah. I got bit by my aunt had a ranch in Alberta. I went when I was 2 years old, or 4 years old, and I have a memory of like having carrots in my hand and holding them up for a horse, and the horse just biting my whole hand like nonchalant.
Yeah,
traumatic. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Horses. Yeah. Oh man, yeah, it's a good time when you're in a house full of cats.
Yeah, honestly, the more you talk about it, the more I understand. It must be a do they shed a ton?
Yes.
It must, yeah.
A lot. It's kind of like it'll go in cycles, like I'll pick the one up and just be covered in hair and it'll be all in the air. And then there's two that really shed a lot. The other four, I don't know if their furs are different, but they're just a lot better with shedding. And then Fuzzy just being 17.
Yeah.
Deaf and almost blind. She just kind of sits on the couch all day.
Just watch. More power to her.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone knows like not to mess with Fuzzy or get that close to Fuzzy.
I have a question for you about
Laurier.
Are you currently going or are you an alumni?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. First year.
Oh, are you in? Did you stay in residence?
No, because I opted to just stay at home because it was all online. So I'm
right.
Just
of course. Yeah.
Chilling here. Yeah.
Yeah, Laurier Res was a weird experience. I was in Little House, the all male res, one of only three in Canada or something like that. Real. I was so upset when I found out. I was like, this is going to suck. It didn't suck. It was like a bunch of great guys. I had fun. There's two all-girls res on either side, so if you want to interact, no big deal.
Nice.
But yeah, that was my, like, coming to campus for the first time and just realizing that it's like, a city block, like four, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a big square in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to spend a lot of time here.
Yeah, I was very dead set on Western. And then I toured Laurier and I loved it there. Partially because it was so small, because Western is huge. And then Laurier is very like, you can see everything from everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. I definitely would have gone to Western if I got in. I promise you that. I think all my friends went to Western or Guelph. Guelph was popular.
I got same, yeah. All my friends are in London.
And they loved it. Like, if you can handle it, I think Western's a great place to be. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure I would have flunked out. Same thing.
I'm in a business. And I did get into Western, actually. But the requirements to stay in the business program at Western are just way, way worse than Laurier. Because Laurier, right. Like, in three courses, you have to have a certain average. Western is literally, even the 2 years before you're in the business school, you have to maintain, like, an 80% average or else you lose it. And then you're stuck in whatever major you did first.
That's tough.
Yeah,
tough.
It was very intense. And so I was kind of like, I'm just going to take it more easy.
I haven't been in school for probably almost 10 years, almost. And I still have nightmares about like my homework is late or like I'll show up to a lecture and I don't know what's happening. Yeah. Still have those panic dreams. Those will never go away.
I get those.
Yeah.
I get those like mid-semester that it's like the first day of the year at a brand new school and I have no idea where anything is.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're late. Yeah. Is there I guess, never mind. You're not up there. I was going to say, is there a comedy scene at Laurier? There wasn't when I was there, but
I'm not totally sure. I know that there's like the Laurier Musical Theater Group, and they're talking about doing some kind of improv stuff, getting more into that. I would love to do that. I did improv in high school, and that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
There is, I mentioned it on past episodes, but there's, so like the business school has JDCC, which is like our case competition team.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also have an esports team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what's called the social team. So the social team just competes in like comedy and improv, and that's what I was on this year, and that was a lot of fun doing that.
Cool. I like improv's my favorite. That's what I like. We did all the Second City stuff, and before everything shut down, like that was my favorite thing to do, was perform improv. Toronto has like a cool scene, like 3-4 theaters that every night there's something fun going on, so it's really the best. I never liked it as a competition though. I know that's a way for schools to interact and stuff, and that's why it makes sense to do that, but comedy as a competition always felt a little annoying, but you're still doing improv, so it's not bad.
Yeah, it's overall, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's getting to like just make a dumb scene with your friends and
laughs.
For sure. Yeah, well, that's all the time that we got for this week. Once again, thank you so much for coming on. Don't forget, everyone, you can catch For Heaven's Sake March 4th, which will be the day after the stream. So if you're watching this on the Radio Laurier stream, it's tomorrow. Go check it out.
And CBC Gem.
Woo!
Yeah. CBC Gem, March 4th, For Heaven's Sake. True crime, comedy, a unique spin on the genre. Enjoy it. Check it out. Thank you very much for having me. I had a blast.
Thanks for coming.